Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, March 4th, 2017. That's Dan's birthday. Happy birthday, Dan. He was in studio a little earlier. This is episode 1368. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now. Enter the promo code TECHGUY and you'll get free a Tracker Bravo with any purchase. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and virtual reality and augmented reality and mixed reality and reality. 8888 Ask Leo, the number. Anything with a chip in it. That's kind of the rule. If it's tech, we talk. Ooh, I like that. Let me write that down. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. The website, good to keep in mind because it's a reference for everything, including the phone number, a link to the chat room, answers to questions, audio and video of the shows, things like that. And that's all stored and free to all at techguylabs.com. No charge. Techguylabs.com. Did you buy Snapchat stock? Snap stock? Big, what they call an IPO, right? Initial public offering. For Snap, and you know, they always talk about the first day pop. The first day pop was big, but no one could really take advantage of it except big institutional investors and people who have special treatment from their broker. Because if you're going to invest in something, a hot IPO like Snap, you know, you call your broker a couple of days ahead of time, says, "Can you get me in at the strike price at the, you know, the." The opening price, and the broker laughs heartily and then says no. Or if you're a big customer, might say yes. And if you were able to get in at the opening price, what was it? It was somewhere between $14 and $17, I remember. I just don't remember which it was. Anyway, if you were able to buy it, let me see here. Yeah, it went off at $17 a share. That actually was, Snap was saying, well, we're going to ask for 14 to 16, but then, you know, the underwriters decide right at the end, oh, let's ask for more, because that means Snap gets more, right? They offered it $17 a share, and the one-day pop was the biggest in 2 years, 44%. At the end of the day, 24.48. So if you were able to buy, you know, at that $17, You would have made a nice return. You just could have sold at the end of the day, said thank you very much, and walked away. Now, by the way, this values Snap, which, remember, their product is an app. That's it. They have an app, the Snapchat app. That's it. Lots of users. The company, because of the app, one app, worth $34 billion. That's more than Marriott, which has more than one hotel, I believe. That's more than Target. That may be a little overheated. What do you think? A little bit. But everybody's interested in young people and how to reach young people. And this is why everybody thinks, people who bought stock, I didn't. I should let you know, buy tech stock of any kind. All my investments are in, you know, long-term index funds. So I don't have any dog in this hunt. And, the thinking, I think, of those who bought is, well, yeah, we know Snapchat doesn't make any money. Did I mention that? They don't make any money. They lose money at a pretty rapid clip. That's why they, I think, went to the stock market. But they're where the kids are, and this is the key. They have 158 million daily active users. Now, remember, Facebook has something like 1.5 billion billion daily active users. Even Instagram has, what was it, the last count? I think it was 600 million daily active users. Even Twitter has 300 million daily active users. So Snap, half Twitter, 158 million, but they're in that magic 18 to 34-year-old. And really, it's 18 to 25-year-old, right? And the problem is these kids don't watch TV. They watch YouTube, and they talk amongst themselves, primarily with Snapchat. So the reason people think this is going to be hugely valuable is, well, advertisers will flock to a platform that can reach kids. They don't listen to this show. Actually, some of you do, don't you? Thank you. They don't watch television. They're on YouTube and they're snapping with each other. The question is, should this inspire you to run out and buy Snap stock? And, well, I am not a stock advisor and I'm not going to tell you whether you should or shouldn't, but I might mention that there are a significant number of people who are shorting the stock, that is, betting against it. Something like $1 billion in shorts over the next few days are expected. Those are people who say, yeah, no. And, you know, they might not be too far off. You look at some of these tech companies that pop on their first day and then they slowly decline over a period of time when people start to realize it's just an app. That's a kind of an amazing number. I'm thinking of what the most valuable app to this point, I think, has been, and it's just for just an app, was WhatsApp. It all started when Instagram sold to Facebook for $1 billion, and everybody went, what, $1 billion for an app? And then Facebook went out and bought WhatsApp for what turned out to be $22 billion. And that seemed like a lot for an app. By the way, I mean, I think the Instagram deal, that was a good deal. The jury's out on the WhatsApp deal. Well, I don't know if that was a good deal. That might have been Facebook's got the money and they're going to do it to keep a competitor from rising. In fact, they tried to buy Snapchat for a long time. Oh, they tried. They tried mightily. Offered them billions of dollars. I guess that just wasn't enough because, as you know, it's now worth $34 billion. $34 billion. The founder and chief executive, the three people founded Snap, one of them was forced out before he got any money. I think he sued and he got a little bit of money, but the two guys still remaining, Evan Spiegel, his shares are worth $6 billion. He had a $6 billion payday this week. Chief technology officer Bobby Mercer, $5 billion. But what they learned from Mark Zuckerberg was, you can sell stock, but don't sell control. So the stock you're buying, you have no control of the company, no votes. 90% of the voting is held by those two guys. I think the market says, you know what? It worked okay for Facebook. You trust, you're investing in the founders and their vision. You're investing in Evan and Bobby and their vision. And Lightspeed Venture, one of the early investors, they put in $485,000 in seed money and then later $7.5 million. So what is that? A total of a little under $8 million. They are worth now $2.1 billion, those shares, $2.1 billion. Benchmark Capital put in $24 million. It's now worth, that stake now worth $3.2 billion. Incredible. Incredible. And of course, the underwriters make lots of money. So we'll see. It's a big deal. It's not the biggest IPO ever. Alibaba was the biggest. That's the Chinese Amazon.com. Facebook, the next biggest. JD.com. Was that a site for juvenile delinquents? Well, I don't know what that is. Let me go to JD.com. They're big, whatever they are. Oh, it's Chinese. Looks like another Chinese, I don't know what, selling something. Then Snap, then Hilton. What a world, isn't it? It's fascinating. Shares still above the $17 price, but they've started to go down a little bit, as one would expect. don't know. I just watch from the sidelines, fascinated. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk about things that matter to you. What smartphone to buy? Lots of new ones out. I'll talk about those. And what smartwatch, if any, what computer? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. JD. Here's the, they sell electronics. It stands for Joy Buy. Money, money, money. You know what I would do if I had all that money? I'd buy a ride around the moon. Did you see that? SpaceX, Elon Musk's space company, has announced that next year, next year they're going to launch a rocket that will orbit, that will fly around the moon and come back home, and two private citizens will get to go, but you'll have to buy the ticket. I don't know how much that'll be. Have they announced a price? Because I'd like, what do you think? You think the Snapchat founders will be the guys to, but they could afford it. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number to call. Heather Hammon will be answering the phone. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning to you.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. I was visiting your place of employ yesterday.
You were live in studio?
I visited my old friend Ron Owens, who works in San Francisco radio. You know, this show is heard on KSFO in San Francisco, among others.
Shucks, because I was there, too.
You were?
I was taking CPR training upstairs.
Oh.
Isn't that good to know?
Yes.
I can save a life.
We actually did that for the staff here, too, because, and who do you think that's for? who's the guy most likely to exceed? So have you been answering the phones? Because I think there's people who want to talk.
I am thrilled with this group of callers this morning. They're really great, but top of the list,
but,
this is a good story.
Yeah.
Tom in Colorado Springs has a great question for you, and yeah, wait till you hear the backstory.
Oh, thank you, Heather. Hello, Tom.
Good afternoon.
Good day. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
I say good day because we have listeners all over the world. For some people, it's the middle of the night.
So true.
Yes.
So true.
Yes.
I am looking for a GPS watch that has cellular service.
Yeah.
That is lockable.
Yeah.
To the wrist. And has a good battery life.
What do you mean lockable? Like, so nobody can steal it?
Nobody could take it off without special tools, special unarming.
What do you carry the nuclear codes? What do you? What is it? Yeah. Okay.
We're talking to a dad along with a mom who panicked last Wednesday night when our 12-year-old son showed up missing.
Oh dear!
Found him an hour later.
Thank God.
And found him, believe it or not, naked in the middle of the golf course after he had found $70, gone to Target, shop, and...
I shouldn't laugh, but...
Oh, I'll laugh.
Wow. Wow. You know, our jobs as parents, as parents is to just keep them from doing anything that would be permanently damaging.
It's more of the fact that we suspect that he's sleepwalking.
Oh, he's sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So you think he did this in his sleep?
Well, at 7:45, he was completely coherent. He was talking to us about his homework and went back down. 15 minutes later, the back door is wide open.
Wow.
And he's missing.
Wow. So he just sleepwalked out of there, went to Target. Naked? Was he naked at Target?
No, we got him on video going in the store at 8:31, fully clothed. On the way there, he found $70.
Well, nice.
I wish I had his luck.
Lucky in sleep. Wow.
Yeah. And then...
So he remembers none of this?
Nope.
So you want some way to keep an eye on him, in effect... I mean, I could tell you a bunch of watches that have those tools, but I don't know of any that have a lockable wristband. Now, I bet
he's a smart kid.
Yeah.
And my fear is the fact that, you know, I've heard of a semi-truck driver that drove from Kansas to Colorado Springs in his semi-truck, parked it, and then woke up for real.
It's amazing. Yeah, I used to sleepwalk as a kid. And you wake up and you've been doing something and you can't figure out how you got there. So yeah. I can understand that. I don't know of any watch that comes with a band. You basically want LoJack for your kid is what you want. And I don't know of any that come with a band that you can't take off, but I do know of many that have removable bands. So you could choose the watch and then maybe replace the band with something that couldn't be easily removed. I mean, he could tear it off.
Yeah.
But nothing that would be easily removed. And, you know, in his sleep, that might be sufficient. So I have a watch I like a lot. In fact, I just got it. In fact, I was planning to review it today. This is from Samsung. It's their Samsung Gear S3 Frontier. Very nice watch. It has all those features, you know, so you could track him. But what it doesn't have is a lockable band. However, it has a standard 22 millimeter removable band. So it means it's a standard watch band that you could replace. So, and that's not the case, by the way, with this LG Sport, which just came out. That's an Android Wear watch. It does not have a removable band, but I think any watch that has a standard band, you might be able to, I think the first thing would be find a band that can't be removed. You'd have to have some way to remove it. You want a lock, I guess.
Yeah, you know, whether or not you use, you know, a special, like a pin removal tool of some sort.
Yeah. And, well, you certainly could take it off that way.
He's completely, you know, yeah, I'm for that.
Wow, poor kid. Oh, yeah, that's terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, he, you know, to wake up to find out, you know, last I remember, I'm sitting on the couch clothed, and now I'm waking up laying in the grass at the golf course in my underwear.
Yeah, no, I completely sympathize. That's terrifying. It's terrifying for you, but it's maybe even more so for him because he's out of control of his body. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen. Poor kid.
Yeah.
He probably will grow out of that. I'm sure you're consulting with the appropriate physicians. But
we've already took him to the ER that first night, and an EEG scheduled for a week and a half out.
So. I would look at the Samsung Gear S3. It's a really nice watch. Does the GPS. You can call it. You can actually make a phone call to it. It'll ring. It's about $250. It will pair to Android or iOS. I think that's, you know, for a consumer-style device, that's probably your best choice. And then you just need to find a band. You know what you could do is you could have a band that, you know, the band that it comes with, you could crazy glue it. you could keep from now there are
what kind of battery life does it have?
It's good. It's 3 or 4 days. It's very good. It's much better than one of the reasons I like it is unlike the Android Wear, which barely get through a day, it'll get you through several days.
Okay.
But that's a good point. You do need to charge that every once in a while. So you need a way to get it off without too much trouble. There are devices.
And then when do you charge it?
Yeah, well, you charge it, right, when he's at school, when he's awake. I'm going to send you to autismspeaks.org. He's obviously not autistic, but they have location devices for this specific purpose that might be more suitable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll put a link in the show notes. Angel Sense, it's GPS and voice monitoring. Yeah. Care track? No, that's fine. You don't have to tell me. I know. I roughly know when I'm at. I'm looking at this site. Thank you, guys. Smiley in our chat room. He gave us a link. This is autismspeaks.org, but I'll put a link in the show notes to the resource library for locating devices. So these are specifically. There's one called Care Track. It's for people with Alzheimer's. Angel Sense. Personal emergency notifier. Freedom Watch monitoring device incorporates radio frequency GPS monitoring. It's a wrist or ankle watch, powerful rechargeable battery, receiver base. I'm sure some of these will not. There's even LoJack, personal LoJack, believe it or not, LoJack safety net.
Maybe I take them down to the cops and have them.
Well, some of these are used by law enforcement. No, some of these are used by law enforcement, but also available for individuals. So there's okay. a long list of these, and this is for Alzheimer's. You know, this happens a lot with elders, right? They just wander right. off.
Yeah.
So I think there are some really good solutions for this, probably better than just a standard Android watch.
If you have a moment in your show. I'm also looking for a webcam program that would do time lapse, like take a picture every 20, 30 minutes
yeah.
over a 2 to 3 day period.
Yeah, all of them will. You just need to be running the software.
Okay.
I used to do this all the time. There's programs like Chronolapse that will, as long as you have a camera on your computer, will just periodically take pictures. There's quite a few of these.
Okay.
I used to use this before we had streaming video. We would use these to do, you know, every 10 seconds a picture of what's going on in the studio, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I gotta record how much water is being used through a water meter.
Ah, interesting. You're making good use of technology in the real world. I like it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for
your show. You're very welcome. Thanks for listening. Scott Wilkinson's here, home theater geek. He's our guru. His podcast, Home Theater Geeks, is at twit.tv/HTG. He also is the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum, where he writes about home theater all the time. Big screen video, great surround sound audio. And I take it you just saw something pretty sweet.
I did. LG held a special reviewers panel or reviewers event in San Francisco. I was kind of up near your neck of the woods. And we got a chance. We had an all-day love fest for LG OLED. It's a love fest, yes.
So these are the ones you told me to get. In fact, last year at the shootout, these TVs won, right, as the best.
They've won the last few years, at the shootout. And it's so funny because LG, in the last couple years, has been using the word perfect. For its TVs.
Well, that's a little much. What's going to happen next year when they have a new one? Is it more perfect?
More perfect. Yeah, we sort of chuckled about that at this event because they did make some improvements over last year. Now, last year's TVs, OLED TVs, were no slouch. They were fantastic. You got one on my recommendation, and I think you find it very good.
I've been very happy with it. And it's 4K, UHD.
4K, HDR. High dynamic range.
Yeah, I love it.
All that stuff. Well, There were a couple of issues with those TVs that golden eyes like me and AVS forum members kind of saw and kind of went, gee, couldn't they improve that? One of them was what's called shadow detail, and in particular in very low light scenes. So it's dark night, it's indoors, it's scary. How much detail can you see in those low light regions? And on the 2016 models, you didn't see as much as you might have hoped. And again, it's only on a few kinds of scenes. It's certainly not on bright scenes. That was no problem. But in these really dark scenes, there was a little bit of problem there. It's called coming out of black. So OLED has perfect blacks, right? I mean, they are totally black. And as the picture comes out of black, that is, as the brightness slowly increases, you didn't see as much detail in those really dark areas as you would like. Well, this year, they've improved that significantly. So I'm happy to say that, you know, they got more perfect. One of the things, and we actually had a chance to examine one of these TVs ourselves, and they brought a bunch of equipment that we could use, and they said, have at it. Go for it. Measure things. Do whatever you want.
That's nice.
So, which was really nice, yeah. And they had people on hand to help us out and so on. So this was with the W7. This is their flagship, brand new, wallpaper thin TV. This is the first TV I've seen that really is wallpaper thin. I mean, it's 2 millimeters thick, the entire panel. And when you put it on the wall, from the wall to the front of the TV is less than 4 millimeters. There's a little bit of mounting hardware, but it's really, really thin. So it's remarkable, actually, because it looks like, you know, it's a piece of wallpaper sitting there on the wall. and picture quality is phenomenal, beautiful. I'd say easily the the best available today, you know, for consumers. The one drawback that I have with it, with the W7 in particular, W for wallpaper, is that
I like that.
Yeah, the TV is so thin that it can have no electronics or no inputs on it. That has to be in a separate box connected by a cable.
Right.
Well, that's fine. I don't mind that. But what the W7 does is that box is actually a big honking sound bar.
Oh, I like that.
Which is great for people who want a sound bar with their TV. But what about those of us who already have a surround system? And what we'd rather have is a smaller box, just a little box with the electronics, the processing, the inputs and outputs that you could maybe hide away.
Do TV companies make TVs without any sound at all? I mean,
yeah. Well, it's rare.
So they have to put some sound in.
They do. They do, because you know, you can call it a TV. If you call it a TV, it has to have a tuner.
Oh,
and I don't know if it has to, but it almost always has some sort of sound.
See, I'd rather just get what I would call a monitor, which is just a screen, and then I provide all the other electronics.
Yep,
the tuner and the sound and all of that.
Yep, exactly. Even though, if you get a monitor, like as you describe, it still needs inputs. It needs video processing.
Right.
It needs some stuff.
Right.
And to put that in a smaller box and to have that as an option would be really nice.
Do companies offer monitors? I mean, pure monitors?
Yeah, it's rare. Because
if TVs, if I just bought their OLED panel, I would even be glad. I mean, everything I'm using does upscaling and all of that stuff. It seems like there's some redundancy. A computer monitor is just a monitor, right? That's right.
Now, Pioneer, in their last year of the Kuro Plasma, remember the Kuro Plasma? Great plasma. I still have one. The last year, they offered it as a monitor, and they called it a monitor.
Nice.
But it's very rare. Yeah. It's very rare. Most companies only make TVs with sound systems, those sound systems sound like crap.
Yeah. Doesn't Vizio make a monitor series where it's just...
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
Oh, I don't think so. Now, to be fair, this sound bar that comes with the W7 actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
It's just not the same. Yeah,
exactly.
Now, another feature that the new 2017 OLEDs have is Dolby Atmos, which is what's called object-based audio. So you can have speakers around you in a normal surround array, you know, 5.1, 7.1, whatever. And you can have speakers overhead. Or alternatively, you can have a separate set of speakers that point upward and reflect the sound off the ceiling, giving you overhead sound.
Mm.
And this is very immersive. I don't think you've ever heard this before, have you?
No.
Okay,
Atmos theaters starting to show up around.
We do, and one of the things we did during this trip was we visited Dolby headquarters in San Francisco.
Yeah, of course they have.
They have just completed a Dolby Cinema, and I'm going to get you an invite.
Yeah, they have nice screening rooms. I've been invited before. They have nice screening rooms down there.
You should really go.
Yeah.
You should really go see this.
Hear it in the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly, the Dolby Atmos with speakers overhead. It's really very immersive. It's really quite stunning when you hear it the way it's supposed to be.
Do most movies now, are they mostly mixed with Atmos?
Well, a lot of movies are. I don't know if I'd say most. I would say many.
Yeah.
I forget the number. They told us a number there, how many movies have been made. 1,500, something like that. Anyway, it's been a lot. But, of course, you won't hear that if you go to a theater that doesn't have the Atmos sound system. You will hear – and the nice thing about Atmos is it scales beautifully. So if you have sounds overhead but you don't have overhead speakers, those sounds get folded into the regular 5.1 and it sounds just fine. But when you hear the real deal and when you see Dolby Vision high dynamic range – all together in a movie, that's really stunning. It's the best audio-video experience available today, in my opinion. But these LG OLEDs come pretty close because they have great high dynamic range, super deep blacks, even brighter brights now. Sounds like a laundry detergent commercial. and they send Dolby Atmos out of their digital audio output, or rather out of HDMI audio return channel, so that you can actually get Atmos sound from the internal apps of the TV or from external devices as well.
Neat. Scott Wilkinson, read all about it. AVSforum.com and, of course, his Home Theater Geeks podcast each week on my Twit network, twit.tv/HTG. Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can stick around for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let me give you a special view. Special.
Oh, Lumpy says a lot of Vizios have TV with no tuner. Says,
well, they don't have a tuner, but they still have speakers.
They still have speakers.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I did not really know that Vizio had a lot of TVs without tuners. Here is the tuner-free link from Vizio. Thank you, Lumpy. Let's check this out. Vizio.com, tuner-free. How interesting. Let's see. What do they say? How do you watch? Yeah, but what is the list of tuner-free? Oh, okay. P-Series? Really? P-Series doesn't have... None of these have tuners? Well, what do you know? By golly. I guess Vizio decided to... You know what? Now you're reminding me. I hadn't thought of this before now, but... last year at the P Series unveiling, I think they did say it was tuner free because they knew that not many people use the tuner inside the TV. So, what's that phrase? Slap me silly and call me Shirley. I forget what that is, but in any event, look at that. Most of their TVs do not have tuners. Another reason why that may be, and now it's all starting to come back to me. Is that we're almost to the transition to ATSC 3.0, which is the next generation of terrestrial broadcasting. I think it's another year away at least, but it's on its way. It's coming. And so putting an ATSC 1.0 tuner in the TV now starts to maybe not make as much sense, although I have heard some pretty significant indications that ATSC 1.0, the current broadcast standard, is going to have to stick around for a while during the transition, even after ATSC 3.0 launches. They're completely different things. And there's going to be an awful lot of TVs and other things out there with ATSC 1.0 tuners in them. So it's all kind of up in the air right now. But okay, so Leo was right. Vizio TVs, most of them don't have tuners. What do you know? Learn something new every day. Let me get back to the chat room here. Yeah, don't call me Shirley. Or my door's ajar. Don't call me Shirley. And evil IIRC. What happened to ATSC 2.0? Good question. I asked that of Rich Chernock on my show last year, and I honestly can't remember his answer. But it didn't happen. I think there was one for a little while. And then somebody's, you know, they sort of said, well, it's getting to be so much more than 1.0. Maybe we better call it 3.0. I don't remember exactly what it was. East Austin says, I have my TV set up with OTA, over-the-air tuning. For me, it is a requirement. And it is important for cord cutters. There's no question about it. Because that's free TV and it looks better. It actually looks better than cable or satellite. But it's limited to only those stations that are broadcasting in your area. So that's what's going on there. Let's see here. Got a couple. I don't have my window handy, so I can't see the numbers. Oh, they're coming up. Okay, here we go.
Thank you, Scott. You're going to stick around for the top?
Sure, happy to.
All right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My phone number is 8888 Ask Leo. And if you want to talk high tech, I'd love to talk with you. Bob is next. He's in Downey, California. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Leo. Traveling overseas, and I'm just trying to figure out, I know you've talked about this a couple times about, you know, what do you do with your cell phone? Do you buy your SIM card, right? What are your recommendations?
Where are you going?
Iceland.
Iceland. Wow. So the first thing I always recommend is a wiki. It's called Prepaid with Data. It's the Prepaid with Data wiki. You'll have to – it's a long URL, so I'm just going to either send you to our show notes, or if you Google Prepaid with Data, it's the first thing that you find. And okay. It is a user-generated website. That's what a wiki is. So all the data on there has been put there by people who have used these SIM cards in these countries. So it's by country. And then it'll tell you who the carriers are. In Finland, it's Siemens, Vodafone, and Nova. And then they'll tell you what the prices are and so forth. Now, here the good news is this is less of a story than it used to be because all of the carriers in the U.S. have finally kind of come around. T-Mobile started it by offering free data roaming internationally in almost every country. I think it's 190 countries. You should check you should check your carriers. Anyway, I'll start with what T-Mobile offered, and then I'll tell you what others have done as a result. So T-Mobile was initially, and this started about 2 years ago, giving you 3G or even 2G slower speed, but unlimited free. And then lately, it's been pretty high speed as I've traveled. It's been very good. And then the calls, you have unlimited texts, and then the calls are, I think, $1 a minute, something like that. So that was a good deal. Sprint followed, and this is makes sense. It's the companies that are trying to become number one, the number two, three, and four companies that are working harder on this. Sprint also followed with their One World program. It's very similar. And then, surprise, surprise, Verizon, which has been the worst for international, has just recently offered a international plan that's much, much better than what it used to be. AT&T, too. Who's your carrier right now?
Is Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon's used to be tough because they were a CDMA network, and CDMA was not widely supported globally. GSM is the standard globally. But now that most of the phones, if you have a recent Verizon phone, you'll have LTE. Is it a fairly recent phone?
I have an iPhone 6. So does it need to be unlocked?
If you're going to put another country's SIM in there, it would be, except for Verizon made a deal with the FCC in a consent decree not to lock their SIM slots. So I'm not sure about the 6. For sure the 6S and the 7 were unlocked. I'm pretty sure the 6 is unlocked, which means, yes, you can go to... Now, remember, when you do this, though, you're going to lose your American number. You'll have an Icelandic number as well as Icelandic data, which is usually a better deal than the data that they offer. But before you do that, I would check with Verizon on their international plans. They've gotten much, much more affordable. And that way, you keep your Verizon number. How long are you going to be there?
Just a week.
Yeah, if it's just a week. You know, if you're going to be 3 months, then you'd want to get a SIM in country.
Mm-hmm.
But a week is short enough. It'd be nice to have your number still working. Otherwise, what you'd have to do is forward your Verizon number to your new Icelandic number. And you're right, you'd have to make sure that the SIM slot was unlocked. It is on probably on your phone, but many carriers and many other phones are not. And then you'd have to make sure that your phone supported the frequencies in that region. It's complicated.
Okay.
So I would first go to Verizon and look at their international plans. They announced not long ago, I think a month or two ago, much improved international plans because of T-Mobile. Because of the competition that they were getting from T-Mobile. So while you're right, a year ago, we talked about this every summer. You know, as summer came along, people were going to go on vacation. This was nonstop. I still will tell you about, you know, this prepaid with data wiki, because it's great. And it'll give you information about frequencies, costs, where to get them, everything you need to know. And the front page has a great amount of data on, you know, what I just said. You know, what are the issues to consider when you're going to be using a third-party SIM card. So that's a great resource. I'm not familiar with Iceland specifically, so I don't know what the right way to go is. But I would certainly check with your carrier to see if you can do this. And in the case of Verizon, you can take your iPhone and pop in another SIM if you need to. Have a great time. Iceland is becoming quite a destination, especially for photographers. It's beautiful. I'm not sure I'd want to go right now. Maybe wait a little bit more to the summer. It ain't named Iceland for nothing, you know. Greg in Van Nuys is next. Hi, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
First time on the air with you.
Well, welcome.
And I did visit your studio audience in November of 2015.
Oh, nice.
And that was a wonderful opportunity, and I see you've moved. But according to what I see on the air today, your background looks exactly like the old studio.
Yeah, we were very clever. We just took the old studio with us.
Good idea.
So the nice thing about when you build a studio is nothing's permanent. You can take it all down and move it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Leo, I have a simple question, which is that I am the chief engineer for a small church, and we record the audio programs of our service once a week. It's about an hour.
Uh-huh.
And the way we've been doing it, I take it on a small digital recorder connected to the mixer and take home the SD card. I take it home. I edit that file on Audacity, which is a Windows program.
Yep.
And Audacity is free, and it's a simple edit. It's not very complex. And then I give the edited file to our webmaster for posting on our website.
Perfect.
My question is, if I buy a laptop computer to work right there from the mixer, I sure love the idea of a Chromebook, but is there some way I would be able to edit audio files on a Chromebook?
You know, do you want to record to a computer?
Yeah, probably.
Instead of the device you're using?
Yeah, we might as well.
You know what I would do is I would do both. I would continue to use the device as a backup and record to the computer, only because then you've got to – I've learned this the hard way. One copy of anything, you're always at risk. Could you record to the Chromebook, and could you edit the audio? That is a very interesting question. One way you could answer that for yourself is use your regular computer and just not use anything but Chrome. I mean, now newer Chromebooks can use Android apps, and there are plenty of Android apps that will do this. I used a web-based audio editor for a long time that was actually really good.
That's what I would be interested
in. Yeah. What you would end up doing is you would save it to their website, and then they would give you capabilities there. Actually, it looks like there are quite a few audio editing choices on Chrome. It's at least six good editing. So you can do that. Audacity is very simple. It's an open source program. By the way, not just Windows, Mac, and Linux as well. Because Chromebooks are used so widely in school, I think this is something that is probably well served. But let me see if I can find the one that was web-based. Oh, man, it was so cool. I'm seeing four good tools here: Twisted Wave, Band Labs, Sound Trap, Flat IO. Some of those are Android. I would bet you can, but I think what you would want to do is experiment. Bring your Windows laptop to church, record to that, and then just try to edit it with Chrome alone, because that's basically what a Chromebook will do. We'll put some suggestions in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. SoundCloud. Let me find that one. There's one I was using. I'm going to find it, too. I'm not going to give up. Twisted Wave. Twisted Wave looks pretty interesting. It looks very much like Audacity. So, you know, since you're familiar with Audacity, Greg, this would be pretty
easy. Now, is Twisted Wave something that is a... Is it a cloud-based program, or is it an Android app, or what?
It is a Chrome OS app.
Okay.
You can save your files on Google Drive, which is kind of what you want to do generally with a Chromebook. But these files aren't so big you couldn't save them on a Chromebook. All Chromebooks have at least 16 gigs of storage. So I'm sure your files, an hour of audio is no more than, say, 500 megabytes at most.
Try 70 megabytes.
70, right, exactly. So you have plenty of space to edit them locally. A lot of these use SoundCloud as their cloud-based storage, but see if I still have it on my Android device. I found a really good subscription service that had a lot of nice features like audio leveling and things, but it was cloud-based, which means you would record to that cloud and then... it would do the processing on their servers. Let me see.
That's fine.
Well, in some ways, it'd be better. Let me see if I can find the name, because I really like this. I was going to use this for a while, and I just can't remember the name. Boy, there's a lot of these. By the way, this is apparently something a lot of people are doing. I'm seeing a ton of solutions here. People seem to like Twisted Wave a lot.
Okay.
So I would take a look at that. And, you know, I love Chromebooks, so I want to say there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah, well, I would love to buy a Chromebook, but I'm just not sure what I would need it for yet.
Right. Well, and yeah, I mean, if you could do this on it, that would be a good start, right?
Yes. I have a Windows 10 computer at work all day, and I have another Windows 10 computer at home in the evening, and so I'm fixed.
Yeah, you're good.
Well, yeah, but I like the idea of the Chromebook. I like the concept.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like you know what you're doing, so I don't think it's not an urgent thing for you.
No.
But I cannot find the name of this. Boy, it's too bad because I really liked it, and I used it for a while. It wasn't Audio Boom, although I like Audio Boom a lot. They're more for us broadcasting, you know. But you might consider this if you're doing this now. What do you put the recordings on your website, right?
Correct.
Yeah, but it'd be nice if people could subscribe, for instance, as a podcast and get them automatically and things like mm-hmm. that, you know. A lot of churches do that, and it's a really good idea. I can't for the life of me find the name of this. I'll keep looking. If I do, I'll put it in the show notes for you.
Great. I appreciate it, Leo. Thanks.
Hey, nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
You too.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So yeah, here we are in the chat room, guys. iPhone 50 420 asked, is there any advantage to buying the new NVIDIA Shield media server with 500 gigabytes of hard drive instead of the basic model? And I said, yeah, if you need local storage for games, because it's a game platform as well, or local media, you know, if you got movies that you can store on there, then that would be a good thing. I'm not a gamer, and I haven't really spent a lot of time looking at the NVIDIA Shield, but it's supposed to be really good. It does implement Plex, I believe, or Kodi, one of those, for streaming local content on some other device in the network. So for that reason, you wouldn't necessarily need the hard drive. Let's see if anybody else has any questions or anything you'd like to talk about. Swamp Rat had a problem with popping sound on audio when the over-the-air TV signal pixelate occasionally had some sort of disruption. Only happens with the two Sony Bravias. Slightly newer Panasonic stays silent during these disruptions. I don't know. I don't think that's something in the Sony. It's some circuitry in the Sony that doesn't like those disruptions, and the Panasonic got it right, and Sony got it wrong. It happens sometimes. East Austin asked, does JVC still make LCD LED panels? I don't know if they make them. They don't make any TVs anymore. I'm sure they make broadcast monitors. So I guess the answer is yes. They do make them, but they don't make them in consumer TVs. They put them in broadcast monitors. They might sell TVs in other places around the world, but not in the U.S., but they do make broadcast monitors. In fact, at NAB a couple of years ago, I saw a high dynamic range monitor that just blew my socks off. It was really amazing, really amazing. So they're doing some really cool stuff. Let's see. Xbox is updating. Budmaster says Xbox is updating to Atmos in the next update. That'd be cool. My door is ajar. Done well. Dolby Atmos is pretty cool. Absolutely. It is really cool. I think it's spectacular. When it's done right, you're exactly right about that. I've heard some pretty bad examples where the mixers didn't really, you know, use the potential of this new format. But man, oh man, when it's done right, it's really, really good. Let's see here. Megan at Twit is looking for advice on a new TV, PC Guy 8088. She is absolutely welcome to contact me, and I will be happy to help her. So, Megan, if you're listening, call me. B. Beatmaster, which movie from the pre-UHD era would you love to see get the full treatment for UHD and HDR? Ooh, that's a good question. 2001, maybe? I think that would look awesome in HDR. Last week's podcast, speaking of UHD and HDR, last week's podcast I had a couple of guys on who went to the HPA Tech Retreat, and a lot of what we talked about was HDR at 1080p. So UHD is otherwise sometimes mistakenly called 4K, right? It's 3840 by 2160 pixel resolution. And, you know, seeing the improvement that gives you over 1080p is subtle at best. But HDR is tremendous. And the broadcasters are thinking about, if we have to broadcast 4K or UHD with HDR, that's going to be a problem. So they're talking about 1080p.
All right, sir. Here we go. Thank you very much. Have a great week.
You too. See you next week.
See you next week. Thanks, Scott. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. So give me a call. We can talk about your tech issues, your woes, your troubles, or something really great that happened to you in tech. We don't get those calls very often. 8888-ASK-LEO. I wonder why. 888-827-5536. The website, which is where we put everything we talk about and links and so forth, techguylabs.com. And I want to encourage you to not only use that, it's free, it's open, there's a search, and there's hundreds, more than 1,000 shows there that you can listen to or you can search through to find answers. But also leave comments if you wish. Those are valuable for us, especially if, well, for instance, our last call, Greg was trying to record and edit audio on a Chromebook, or was interested if he could do that. If you've got experience with that and something you like and you'd want to recommend it, that's the place to do that. TechGuyLabs.com. Saw a lot of new phones in Barcelona. I wasn't there. You don't have to go anymore to any of these conferences, much as I would like to go to Barcelona, because, you know, it's the internet. Everything, they even do live streams and so forth. In fact, we started the Mobile World Congress last week this time with Samsung's event. They didn't announce any new phones. They said they'll announce the new Galaxy S8. I think a phone a lot of people love, the S7, S6, S3, S4, S5. The S8 will be announced March 29th, later this month, for availability in April. That looks to be a good phone from all the leaks I've seen. I saw coverage of lots of good phones, though, from companies like LG, their G6. You've heard me talk and sing the praises of Motorola's G series. These are very inexpensive, roughly $200 Android devices that are, I think, you know, very good for the price. Motorola announced the next generation of that, the G5. And again, around $200, some nice features. That's the phone I recommend to people who are looking for an inexpensive, relatively inexpensive Android phone. You know, all the phones that get all the attention are the $700, $800 phones. They're so expensive. But if you think of it as this is your computer, it really is silly to think of it as a phone. Although there are companies selling phones. Nokia announced two very nice smartphones, Android smartphones, at a, you know, $350, $400 price range, kind of mid-range phones. But they also announced a $50 dumb phone that harkens back to their old candy bar phones. Remember those about 15 years ago? They don't do anything, just make phone calls. $50 is the 3310. It was kind of cool. Even has Snake, the game, the one and only. However, I have to say, I don't hardly ever make phone calls these days with my phone. That's one of the maybe most important aspect is internet browser, then camera, right? And then game platform, and then phone. Oh, I left out communications with text messages and messaging of other kinds. And then phone. So it's number five in the list. The Nokia just does one of those, maybe a little gaming. Who else? Let's see. HTC. I'm waiting to get the HTC U Ultra, which is a new phone. They didn't talk much about it at Mobile World Congress. HTC has been struggling, unfortunately, because they've always made really nice phones. They had some kind of bad ones. They've struggled a little bit. I'm waiting to see the Ultra, which I should get. I pre-ordered it. I guess I'll get it in the next few weeks, months. I don't know. They don't say. Really, the big story, I mean, the company that was maybe most important was a company you maybe never even heard of, the company that makes the chips that go in the phone, Qualcomm, which is really owning this market. Almost all the new phones, almost all of them announced, were running some form of Qualcomm chip. That's a U.S. company out of San Diego. And they're just going great guns. Their latest chip, the 835, is really, in fact, in a way, all the most recent chips from Qualcomm are really desktop speed. You're getting a fairly powerful computer in that phone. So Qualcomm, of course, you know, very much a presence at Mobile World Congress. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's, speaking of the phones, let's go to Paul, Rochester, New York. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Glad to speak with you.
Nice to talk to you.
So I've got a pretty common problem, I think, these days, but it's, you know, it's hard to get around. Apparently, I've got a virus or maybe I think it's actually a Trojan infecting my computer. The name of it is Trojan.agent.e.generic. And it is flagged by Malwarebytes, so it picks it up, you know, flags it. I click on deleting it, and it does delete. But then very quickly thereafter, you know, maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe a day later, it comes back, keeps coming back. The effect on the machine is to slow it down a lot. And I run, you know, Malwarebytes. I run Avast antivirus. I run super anti-spyware. I think I'm doing all the, you know, preventive things right, but it just keeps coming back at me.
Who reports, what program is reporting that you have this?
This is Malwarebytes.
Okay.
Reporting, and it flags it as being in under Windows, right in the Windows folder in a file that it calls hosts. So it's Windows/hosts is where it is. Although when I go to that folder, you know, to the Windows folder, I don't always see it. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And even when I do see the file there, and I open it up using Notepad, it is there's just
so the word generic,
mm-hmm.
literally means it's a generic Trojan. It isn't a specific. It doesn't recognize anything specific about it. It
no.
just sees something it doesn't like. This is one of the reasons I'm really not a fan of malware removal tools in general. Malwarebytes may be the best of them, but this is kind of a non-useful result they gave you.
I've run some additional tools like Kaspersky and Bitdefender.
What do they report?
And Avira. Bitdefender did find it, and it gave the location, and I deleted it manually. And that worked for a while, but then it came right back again.
Well, so it sounds like they're not removing anything, or whatever it is, it isn't. Maybe it isn't even a Trojan. Maybe we don't even. It's, you know, the word generic should be the giveaway on this. It doesn't really know what you've got.
Okay.
So it's finding something it doesn't like.
Yeah.
This is why I really don't like. In general, by the way, more and more we're hearing that antiviruses themselves can be a vector for this stuff. Kaspersky, most notably, just recently was dinged because, you know, the way the antiviruses work is they're very, very virus-like themselves. They hook into your operating system. They do it for good, not evil. But nevertheless, the hooks that they use to get into your operating system can be misused by bad guys. So, you know, the fact that it's finding something and then it says it's removed, but it ain't, to me, is an exact, you know, kind of reason why I don't like these things in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really wanted to see if it was coming back, one way to do that would be to unplug your computer from the internet, and, you know, just not get online, remove it, and then see if it comes back. If it comes back, then it was not removed. And I don't even know if it is malware, to be honest. Well, what? No, it's we don't know what it is because Malwarebytes is detecting something it says is a Trojan, but it can't identify it. That's why it says generic.
Okay.
Trojan.agent is meaningless.
Okay, so
It drives me crazy. It could just be bugging you for no reason, in other words. You don't see any other weird behavior. Well, you see it's slowing down.
Yes, it does slow down tremendously. Yeah. So
almost always, the only way to get rid of this stuff reliably is to, I hate to say it because it's a pain in the butt, reinstall Windows, back up your data, and reinstall Windows. But hold on a second. Let's take a break because I have to take a break. But I want to talk more about this with you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what you're getting in effect is information that isn't actionable. It's decided to act on it. Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
So, and that's why I'm wondering if it can even restore, if it's really removing anything at all.
Yeah.
So one way to do this, and it's probably a good idea, is to run, and I don't know if you've done this, is to run it in safe mode. Are you running Malwarebytes in safe mode?
Not presently.
So reboot into safe mode. Yeah. Because it may be, this is in general, removing viruses is a good idea because it may be resident in memory, and so you remove the file, and it sees that and goes, okay, fine, and replaces it. So reboot into safe mode, which in theory will keep it from loading. Then remove it. See if that works.
Yeah.
You said, does Kaspersky report a virus or not?
No, it didn't. When I ran it,
yeah. So there's a little bit of a scammy thing that any malware tools use. They report things. The last thing they want is for you to run it and nothing happens. So if they're reporting something that nobody else sees,
mm-hmm.
then Malwarebytes is suspicious. It's like, well, what are you finding? And it keeps coming back. You keep finding it. This goes back to the days when antiviruses would find cookies or spyware tools would find cookies. None of the
which are harmless.
Yeah. What version of Windows are you using?
10.
So I would get rid of them all. Windows 10 comes with a decent, not great, antivirus. The antivirus is, what you're doing is kind of old thinking. Nowadays, most security experts say do not put an antivirus on Windows 10. Don't put any malware on Windows 10. Windows 10 will do what it needs to do. And just be careful about what you do, because as you can see, even if you're running all this stuff, you still are getting something.
What do you do then? I mean, when you get something like this,
you shouldn't get it if you're careful. Does the malware, let's see, the Malwarebytes forum, Trojan agent, it's e.generic.
Trojan agent, e.generic, yes.
E-generic.
With a dot between all those words.
Yeah. I mean, agent virus, but can't remove it. I have Malwarebytes, blah, 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 blah. I'm seeing this over and over again. So the reason we say nuke it is because if something has infected your system, you can remove that, but it may not, in fact, be the only thing. It's only the one you can see. And the only way to be sure is to reinstall Windows from a known good source.
If I want to reinstall Windows, I originally had Windows 7 and I upgraded.
You now are that hardware is now authorized for Windows 10. So all you need to do is download the Windows 10 media creation tool, get it from Microsoft, nobody else.
Okay.
And it will automatically authenticate. You don't have to worry about a serial number or anything.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah, because they call it a entitlement. You're entitled to Windows 10 now on that hardware.
Okay.
I understand your frustration because it seems to. There seems to be something there, and it keeps coming back. But at the same time, I'm questioning whether there's something there since Kaspersky, which is very good, did not find it.
Right.
And Malwarebytes keeps removing it. And hold on a second. We're coming back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is the worst possible scenario, which is, Paul's antivirus software. Actually, in this case, it's not even antivirus software. It's a tool called Malwarebytes, which I have very mixed feelings about. It's a good tool, but I think it can, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it. Anyway, it finds something. It doesn't know what it is. It's calling it a generic Trojan. In other words, it sees something it deems suspicious, but it thinks it's removing it, but it doesn't. It keeps coming back. You've run another very good antivirus, Kaspersky, against it, and Kaspersky sees nothing.
Right.
So, in my opinion, either it's a spurious error message. I think that's most likely. It sees something it doesn't like, but it doesn't know what it is.
Well, there's something there because the machine definitely slows down.
Yeah. So the reason I always come back to this is if somebody bad put something on your system, if you installed something or something ran in your system or there's an exploit, you I presume, do all the intelligent things. You update Windows automatically, regularly. You update all the software that goes online, like Adobe Acrobat Reader and Adobe Flash and your browsers. They're all updated automatically to the latest version. That's, by the way, the single most important thing you can do. You're careful about where you get software. If you see a pop-up that says, oh, your Flash is out of date, why don't you download and run this? You're skeptical, and you go to the Adobe Flash site directly instead of clicking that link. Somebody sends you a link in an email, you absolutely don't click it. You're careful about, you know, where you get your files from. You never install something you didn't go out and ask for proactively. Things like that. It's unlikely that you have anything. Partly what will happen here is the fact that you have not just an antivirus on there, but you have then an anti-spyware tool and Malwarebytes all on the same machine, it could very well be they're interacting poorly. So I personally, if it were me, I'd get rid of all of that security software. Windows comes with an antivirus and a scanner built in. Windows 10 does, your version. I would reinstall Windows 10, as I mentioned off the air to you. You can do that because you upgraded. You're entitled to Windows 10. All you have to do is get the Windows Media Creation Tool from Microsoft. You're going to make a USB key with a Windows 10 installer on it. Wipe the drive. Back up your data.
It's backed up.
Yep, good man. You've done everything right. That's why I'm skeptical about this. I think the only thing you did wrong, and it's really not wrong, is you've installed all this security software on there, which is annoying. Now, it's slow. That could be a lot of things. But I think wiping the drive, reinstalling Windows will tell you if that's a virus or something else going on. A lot of times when a computer slows down, it's a hard drive getting less reliable.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. It's about an 8-year-old machine.
Yeah, well, Novo 5. Yeah. So spinning drives get more difficult to read after a while, and it could be that a critical sector that Windows needs to read is readable, but not readable right away. So it spends more time trying to read those sectors, and it can make the machine look like it's, you know, underwater. So if I were you, I'd reinstall Windows because you don't know what's on there. But you may be overreacting because it may be nothing. It may just be Malwarebytes. Try removing, and this is not easy, removing all your security software. There is a website that will scan online, you know, that you don't need to install. So it's called virustotal.com. And what it does is actually scans your drive against it'll analyze files. I don't know if it'll do your drive. Trend Micro, ESET, and a bunch of other antivirus companies have online scanners. I would try those rather than installing the security software. Trust to Windows Defender and your good hygiene. You do all the right things. You update regularly. You're careful about what you get, download, and so forth. I haven't used an antivirus on Windows in years. And what we've learned, as I said earlier, is that many antiviruses open doors to bad guys. What you're seeing is not I don't think a virus. I think it's some sort of malware bites, false positive. So remove all your antivirus software before you reinstall Windows. Remove all the security stuff as clean as you can, and then run the ESET online scanner or the Trend Micro online scanner, one of the online scanners, or all of them if you want, and see what they see. If it's still slow, then I would start to look to the hard drive. It's maybe wearing out as opposed to a virus.
Okay.
Can Malwarebytes give you that file that it says is in the hosts?
What's that?
Does Malwarebytes offer you a file?
It just points to the file. It points to a file that it calls hosts.
Yeah, hosts is a... see, this is a spurious. So hosts is a file that's kept on all machines that speeds up internet lookups, your DNS.
Usually it's in the folder, which is inside of...
That's your host's folder. You could go into that folder and either delete it or edit it. You know what? This is a bogus, a false positive, in my opinion. That's why it keeps coming back, because it's not being fixed, because it's not there.
Fixing a problem you're saying that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the problem may be just that there's too many cooks.
Between all the antivirus and the malware bytes.
It's not unusual at all for antivirus programs to flag other antivirus programs as viruses. So I'm bluntly honest with you. I think nowadays antivirus is way, if you look at a list, there was a recent study where they asked users and they asked experts, security experts, what the most important things to do. Users had antivirus at the top because we've told you that for years. Experts, it's like number 9 or 10. It's like most experts don't even use antiviruses. Get rid of the security software. Behave as you are already hygienically. And then periodically, you can use an online scanner if you're really nervous.
Okay, Leo. Thanks again.
I appreciate the call. It's I have very mixed feelings about Malwarebytes. I think they're a good company. They're good people. They're trying to do a good deed by giving you a virus or often a spyware or adware removal tool. But I think it also gives people a false look at what's going on. I think this is a case of a false positive. It's not actually something that's going on. It's just flagging it as suspicious. And I think also gives people false security feeling. They go, I'm covered. Oh, I removed it. And there's still stuff that Malwarebytes doesn't see hiding deep within your system. Practice safe computing. That's number one. You have an antivirus already with Windows 10. You have anti-spyware. You have Microsoft's malicious software removal tool. All of this stuff. Every patch Tuesday, that tool gets updated and runs a scan. All of this behind the scenes. I think you're fine. I don't think you need a third-party antivirus. I think it's a bad idea, to be honest. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you disagree and you want to talk. If you've got any issue, I'd love to hear from you. And it's the reason you often hear me recommend tablets and most importantly Chromebooks, because they're not prone to these kinds of security issues. If you're running Windows, you do have somewhat of an obligation to become a security guru. You didn't know you signed up for that, did you? Well, you did. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Dave is on the line from Merced, California. Hello, Dave.
Good afternoon, Leo. I'm hoping to be proactive here and prevent some of those woes and troubles that you talked about earlier.
Good man. I like it.
I have got a laptop that has two hard drives in it. One is a solid-state drive that has the operating system and all of the file programs.
Mm-hmm.
The other is used primarily just for the data storage. My question is this. Seagate, C-Tools is telling me that drive, the spinning drive, has about a little over 19,300 hours of on time.
That is a long time, yeah.
I'm wondering, when is it time to replace the drive? I know that manufacturers typically have an average mean time for failure.
Yeah, they mean MTBF, but the way they calculate it is kind of a joke. So the way you calculate an MTBF, mean time between failure, remember mean is the key word, that means average, right?
Right.
Is they'll take 100, let's say, 100 drives, and they'll run them all until a certain number fail. And then they'll calculate from that the mean time before failure. But what that tells you is, the time that roughly half the drives will fail in, but the other half will continue on. The best study I've seen, a study that came from Google, which uses a lot of drives, said that hard drives, these are the spinning drives, hard drives will fail a lot at first, kind of infant mortality. And then the failure rate basically drops after 6 months to nothing for the first couple of years and then goes up about 8% a year thereafter. What you don't know is if you have one of the miracle drives that's going to go another 10 years, how many years old is that? 19,000 hours. That's a lot of spin time.
Ooh, boy, I don't even remember how long ago I put it in. It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good news is hard drives are cheap. The bad news is it's a laptop, which means it's not, it's kind of non-trivial, I think. I don't, have you opened it up yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not, you know, truthfully, you could get a replacement SSD and put it in there and improve speed and performance in general. The thing is, you don't really know when a hard drive is going to die. That meantime between failure, it doesn't tell you a whole lot. Just that when we tested a bunch of drives, we don't even know if they were typical. Half of them failed before, you know, after this period of time. So okay. I would say, in the words of HAL 9000 in the movie 2001, I suggest you put the drive back in service and let it fail. Back up your data. You're doing that anyway. Any drive can fail at any time. That's one thing the Google study showed us. There's no way to know. And I think just because it has 19,300 hours is no reason to worry.
Okay.
All right. If it starts, what you'll know. Spinning drives tend to fail gradually, as opposed to solid state drives, which just stop working. So you'll kind of know. You kind of have an idea. If you really cared about this, which my thought is you shouldn't, that like don't worry, but if you really cared about this, you could go out and get SpinRite. That's my friend Steve Gibson's program. It goes through a drive, checks all the sectors, moves data off of hard to read sectors. All hard drives, especially spinning drives, have hard to read sectors. It kind of refreshes the drive by running that. Another thing you could do is try to make it fail. Defrag it. In fact, apparently, my friend Alan Melventano, who's an expert on solid-state drives, says this isn't even a bad thing to do to solid-state drives, where fragmentation is not an issue. Solid-state drives, you don't have to worry about fragmentation because they have random access. There's zero seek time, so how the data is optimized is irrelevant. But when you do run a defrag on a solid-state drive, it forces it to trim deleted files. It cleans it up. So, you know, you don't need to, but run a disk defrag on both the spinning and the solid state drive. But frankly, I wouldn't worry about it. I keep running drives till they die. I wish you could use this smart technology. It's a Seagate drive, so chances are, unless it's really old, it has smart built in. This was a really interesting technique that would have been really valuable, would have been really great if the hard drive manufacturers had not undermined it. Smart was originally created to kind of warn you when drives got unreliable. SMART. But the problem is, after the standard was announced, the hard drive company said, well, we don't want software on the computer that will warn people that a drive is less than reliable. So they basically took out all the good stuff to the point where SMART, which stands for Self-Monitoring Analysis and Reporting Technology, doesn't do anything of worth. If it did, you could get a tool that would check the SMART status of that drive. You might still do it. And it would tell you, in theory, if there was a failure imminent. My experience with SMART is it's just not that smart. Who's next here? I'm not that smart either. Bernie in Claremont, California. Hi, Bernie. Leo Laporte, D-Tech.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks, Bernie.
I had a question. I had an old laptop running XP because it's running something for vehicle analysis. And Microsoft stopped supporting Windows Essentials. And
supporting XP. They also stopped supporting Internet Explorer for XP. Google has stopped supporting Chrome for XP. Firefox is about to stop supporting Firefox for XP. However, I understand you need it because I guess the car auto diagnostic software doesn't run on later versions of Windows, right?
It only runs XP.
Yeah. You know, this McLaren F1, there's only 9 of them. But it was an old compact laptop that ran the diagnostic software, and they have to go to eBay to buy new ones anytime they want. And it's, I think, Windows, I'm sure it's like Windows 95. So you're not alone.
What can I run in place of Security Essentials?
Does that laptop have to go online?
Sometimes, yes.
All right. That's the only time you're in trouble is if you go online. If that laptop never went online, XP would be fine. You just keep running it. What you're not getting is updates to not just Security Essentials. That's the least of it. You're not getting updates to XP. So if there is some horrific, terrible bug that allows a bad guy to completely own your system, even if Microsoft knows about it, they're not going to fix it.
I see.
Now, the good news is we all were very worried when Microsoft sunsetted XP. This was a couple of years ago. We thought, oh, this is good because lots of people, I mean, I last time I saw it was more than a quarter of all Windows machines are still running XP. Lots of people are still running it. Microsoft really hopes they'll upgrade. But oddly enough, there haven't been any big virus exploits on XP.
Really?
Yeah. Not that I know of, anyway. So what we thought would be a disaster has not proven to be a disaster. I would say you don't need Security Essentials, so just uninstall it. You won't get that warning anymore. That's their antivirus, right? And you don't really need that. Nothing's up to date. Your browser's not kept up to date. You're still running, and you can't run anything later in Internet Explorer 8. Just don't online with that thing any more than you have to. And if you do go online, be very careful. I wonder, would you be able, you might not be able to, but would you be able to run Windows XP in a virtual machine on a more modern operating system and still use the auto-diagnostic software? Maybe or maybe not. It might not like emulation.
I hadn't thought of that.
Is there a hardware connector? Probably, right?
There is, yes.
Yeah. So emulation might not pass that through. But that's the only really safe way to run XP. I just say, don't use it online if you can help it. That machine should be dedicated to diagnostics on that car and nothing more. And just uninstall Security Essentials so it doesn't bug you, because it's not worth it. It's not doing anything anymore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He hung up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. The website, techilabs.com. Got a tweet from Cata River, at Cata River 1. Cata River has a Nexus 5, wants to know, Pixel now or Pixel 2 later? I mentioned earlier in the hour a bunch of new Android phones coming, but I think really the Android phone to own is the one made by Google, the Pixel, or the Pixel XL, depending on the size you like, because these are guaranteed to be up to date. You know, they push the security updates as soon as they're available, all of that. And, you know, security is important. You hear us talk a lot about security. I'm as dully designed as the Pixel phone is, and it just really is generic. I guess all phones are somewhat generic these days. You know, it's just kind of metallic and not that interesting. It is a great phone. It's fast. I really like the camera's superb. There are, of course, lots of rumors that there will be a new Pixel. In fact, Rick Osterloh, who's in charge of hardware at Google, says there will be a new Pixel this year. But what does that mean? I don't know. I'm thinking it's going to be this fall. And unfortunately, Osterloh also said or implied that it would be the same price. These are very expensive. These cost as much as a new iPhone. Google, I guess, has decided, well, you know, We'll leave it to others to make inexpensive Android devices. And there's so many good ones out there, including, as I mentioned, the Moto G5, which is coming out in the next few weeks. And I like the ZTE Axon 7 is a great phone. The OnePlus 3, there's plenty of good sub-$400 Android devices. And I guess Google just decided, well, if it's going to be our phone with our name on it, we want it to be a premium device. Show the best off, right? Show how great Android could be. If cost is no object, in effect. And I love the Pixels. So I think the problem is we don't know how long you'd be waiting. You could be waiting 6 months or more. I think you probably will be waiting 6 months or more. So that's the question. Do you want to wait 6 months for a Pixel 2, which will, of course, be somewhat better? It's not going to be hugely better because what are you going to do with a phone? What can you do to make it better? We're kind of at what the kids put it, peak iPhone or peak smartphone, where it's as good as it's going to get. It'd be small incremental upgrades, but nothing dramatic. So I guess I'd say get the Pixel today while it's available. It's been, they've had a hard time keeping that in stock. 8888 Ask Leo. Thanks for the tweet. I am at Leo Laporte if you want to tweet at me. Jimmy in L.A. is next. Hi, Jimmy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. Hey, Leo, I got a simple question for you.
Yes, sir.
This antivirus, anti-malware spyware that they advertise on TV, they call it a six stick.
Yeah, don't get it. Don't get it. Terrible. No.
I've been trying to get a hold of you for 3 weeks.
Did you already buy it?
No, that's why. I want to ask you first. Let me ask Leo, before anything.
This is, getting it on a stick is no different than downloading it. It is only 10 bucks, so, I guess. The problem is an antivirus that isn't up to date all the time is useless. I'm not a fan of antiviruses. You probably heard me talk about this. I'm looking at fixmestick.com. I don't know what antivirus is on here. I'd like to know. Well, whose antivirus is this? What are you putting on here? It's for Mac or PC, which makes me suspicious. The Fix Me Stick is I'm reading their copy on the website. Yeah. External hardware device that runs before your computer starts, enabling it to that's good, by the way. That's a better way to do it. To remove viruses, spyware, trojans, rootkits, and malware that antivirus programs cannot, so that you can keep the computer you have, keep your pictures and email, remove unwanted programs, speed up your PC or Mac. It promises a lot, but I see these things advertised on TV, and because they're not telling me, well, who's antivirus? Where is this coming from? What software's on here? What is this?
There's no software. Supposedly, you don't download anything.
And I like that, but you can make your own Fix Me Stick, but I'm not a fan of antivirus anyway. I think it gives you a false sense of security. You should just do all the things I always say. Update regularly. Yeah. Anything that goes online plus your operating system, update them. Whenever there's a critical update, make sure you have that installed. Don't take candy from strangers.
Yep.
No files from anybody you don't know. If there's a pop-up on your screen that says, download this, don't do it. Yeah. If it says, if it says your flash is out of date, update it. Don't just click the update button. Because, by the way, it's a phony thing. If you want to check, go to Adobe's Flash site and download it from there. Mm-hmm. Always get stuff from the people who make it.
Reliable source.
And you type in the address. Never take candy from a stranger, whether it's in an email, a message, a pop-up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, I learned the hard way.
The only way is
to be a smart computer user. You can. You have to. That was my question, Leo.
You're smart. You know what you're doing.
Thank you, though.
Thanks for calling. And if the folks from Fix Me Stick want to tell me more about what this is, by the way, it's the other reason I don't trust them is because how they sell it. Because on the front page, they say $9.95. Oh, but what you really want is Fix Me Stick Pro, which is going to cost you a little bit more. What do you think, huh? $9.99, $9.95? No, that's the 30-day trial version. A year of home is $60 a year. A year of Pro is $300 a year. No. You're going to have to convince me Fix Me Stick. That sounds bad. And anyway, you don't need it. If you want, and I don't think this is a bad idea, if you want to have an antivirus that runs before you boot, that's not a bad idea. In fact, let's do it right. Let's not just do an antivirus. Let's make a boot recovery disk or USB key. The old days it was a CD, right? Nowadays you put it on a USB key. Put an operating system on there. Put any antivirus you want. Put any system recovery tools you want. That is a very valuable thing. Everybody should have that. And you can make a rescue disk, that's what I call it, yourself for just the cost of the USB key alone. There are a lot of companies, actually a lot of free places that will let you make this kind of stuff. So don't make it yourself. If you just search for rescue disk, Actually, you know, this is a good one for the chat room. Used to do Hirons rescue disc. Remember that? There were a number of these rescue discs. What's the best one these days for Windows 10? Everybody needs a boot disc, right? That's really true. You should have a disk that you can run if your Windows won't boot up, if you're having trouble, that you can boot from on your computer. Most modern computers will boot from a USB drive and then repair things. There are certainly open source, freely available rescue solutions like Boot Repair Disk and Hirons. I stopped recommending Hirons because I think they had a lot of commercial software on there. It was kind of like a little sketch, right? Should be free stuff. But Hirons Boot CD, that used to be a very good one. The Ultimate Boot CD, are they still around? UBCD? That comes with a bunch of utilities. You can always put a Linux system on a USB key. Boot to that. That'll have a lot of choices. So we'll get the chat room to work on that, and we'll get some recommendations in our show notes at techguylabs.com. It doesn't have to boot Windows. In fact, it'd probably be most useful if it booted Linux or FreeDOS, something simpler than Windows that you could use to figure out if there's a problem with Windows or it's a hardware problem. Ubuntu makes, you know, a great boot disk. What they call a live CD of the Ubuntu operating system. That has a lot of good tools on it. But it'd be nice to have an antivirus, a disk recovery tool, you know, file inspector. Some good stuff like that. We'll get everybody in the chat room working together on this one. We'll get some links there. That's free to use, always open, 24/7, techguylabs.com. It also has a link back to our podcast network. If you listen to the radio show, And you have a thirst for more geek knowledge, I do about 10 more shows. In fact, we do about 20 shows on our network, all about Windows and Mac and security and Android and iOS. You'll find that all at our website, twit.tv. Or just, you know, there's a link on techguylabs.com. As usual, that's all you need to remember. We're going to take a break for news from your local station. More coming up on the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by The Tracker. Do you ever lose anything? According to Newsweek, the average American spends 55 minutes a day looking for stuff they know they have, but they can't find. You'll save a lot of time, a lot of angst, if you go to thetracker.com right now and pick yourself up a few Tracker Bravos. Put them on your keys, put them in your wallet, put them in your luggage, put them on your bike. And you'll find those lost items in seconds. What is a Tracker Bravo? Well, it's about a size of a quarter, weighs less, actually. It's anodized aluminum. It's got a battery in there and a Bluetooth LE. You pair it to your phone, to the Tracker app. The Tracker app on your phone, iOS or Android, can handle 10 different trackers. It connects with your phone and keeps a conversation going with your phone. So if you leave your keys behind, your phone will let you know. If you leave your phone behind, the tracker will let you know. And see that button on the tracker right there? You push that. That makes your phone howl. You could set the ringtone or whatever the sound is. So it's a great way to find your phone. But, of course, mostly the way the tracker's used, you leave your keys behind, you drive off. Now you look at your phone, you'll know the last place that you saw your keys. It'll be on a map on your phone. And this is something that makes the tracker unique. They have the world's largest GPS network, crowd GPS network. See, everybody who buys a tracker is part of this network. And when they walk by your lost device, their software will say, oh, there's Leo's stuff, and will ping your phone. They've sold 4.5 million trackers. That means there's trackers everywhere in the world. So no matter what happens to your keys or your bike or your phone or your luggage, you'll be able to find it. When another tracker user comes within 100 feet, you'll get an update. 30-day money-back guarantee. Give it a try. You can get it monogrammed. You can get it. They have UV LED printing. You can actually get a waterproof cover for it so you can put it on your pet. It's light enough. It's lighter than a dog tag. And you know, the Tracker Bravo is one of the few trackers, Bluetooth trackers, that you can replace the battery in. So it's going to just keep going and going and going. Stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com. Use the promo code TECHGUY. buy all the stuff you want, and then when you use that promo code, you get an extra free Tracker Bravo with any order. Nice. Nice. T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R, thetracker.com. Don't forget that promo code Tech Guy to get a free Tracker Bravo. Just throw it into your box with any other order. The Tracker! Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, viruses, antiviruses, and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. And, of course, we have everything you need if you listen to the show and you hear something I mention or a link or you want, you know, more information. It's all at the website, techguylabs.com. That's free, no cost. Max in Bakersfield next. Hi, Max. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hi, Max.
I just wanted to know your thoughts on the new Nintendo Switch.
Oh, well, did you get one yet?
No, I'm trying to save up the money.
Yeah, so this is Nintendo and their newest game machine, which is kind of an interesting idea. I don't think anybody's done this. It's a hybrid portable system. You've got the controllers, you snap it on a little 10-inch screen, and you can carry it around and play the game that way. Or you connect the screen, which is the game machine as well, to your TV, detach the controllers, and you can play the games that way. I am not the guy to ask because I'm not a big Nintendo fan. I'm too old for that. I grew up in the Atari Sega era. The people in their 30s are the ones who still, you know, have this thing for Mario and Zelda. There's just something going on. And I'm guessing your generation is kind of interested, too. Did you have a Nintendo Wii or a Nintendo U? Wii U?
Yeah, I have both of those, actually.
Do you like the Wii U? Do you play the games?
Yeah, I'm actually a huge fan of retro games.
Oh, nice. Well, this isn't going to be a very good retro gamer, I don't think, but people are very excited about it. I think there's kind of mixed feelings. One of the biggest problems is it doesn't have a whole lot of games to begin with.
The only things that are, like, on it right now are, like, Zelda.
Yeah. But, you know, for people who are Zelda fans, it's a big deal because Zelda hasn't been around in a long time.
Yeah.
We're going to do a full review. We're going to have somebody who's actually a serious Nintendo gamer come on and review our next show, the new Screensavers, which is on in a couple of hours on the podcast network, twit.tv. We'll be doing that live. It's kind of expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like $300.
$300.
It's like really expensive.
Yeah. Do you still, let me ask you this, do you still play with the Wii U?
Yeah, my favorite game on there is Super Mario Maker.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, you just make Mario.
Yeah, levels. And I suspect that most of the Mario games will migrate to the Switch at some point. So, the Wii, see, here's the problem. The last game console that Nintendo released was the Wii U. And people were very excited about it. And then it kind of was a flop because, well, people bought it, but they didn't really use it after a while.
Yeah, because I think that people, like, didn't like how it was, like, 3 hours of gameplay and then it just died.
Yeah. That might be a problem with the Switch, too, huh? Do you want to use it on your TV or are you interested in as a portable device?
I'm more interested in the portable, like, factor. I want to see how it turns out.
Yeah. I think that's going to be kind of intriguing because you can carry it around. You have probably, how old are you?
I'm 10.
So you have smaller hands. That's another complaint adults have often is that these controllers are a little cramping if you have big hands. So
I think it's more focused on like little kids.
It's more for kids, I think. Yeah. See,
yeah.
So play with the, if you can go to a GameStop or somewhere that has it, make sure you're comfortable with the controllers. I feel like they had to compromise a little bit to make the controllers, work in this kind of. I think, looking at it from a distance, I feel like they were too attached to the form of it, the portable, switch it over to the TV thing. And so they compromised what we call human factors, the way you use the controllers and stuff, in order to fit this conception they had of a portable slash, you know, of a switching device. So yeah. I don't want to discourage you. It really ultimately, doesn't it come down to the games? So
yeah, I feel like the games are going to be the selling factor of it.
It's always true of any system. You know, we always talk all about the hardware and all that stuff, but really all that matters is if it has a game on it that you want to play, and if the form factor, the way it is, works well for that game. If you like retro games, here's what I would do if I were you. You like retro games, right?
Yep.
Are you familiar with something called MAME?
No.
MAME is software that lets you run retro games on any computer. What I would get, if I were you, is a Raspberry Pi. They're
$35. I already have one of those.
Oh, all right. Well, you're way ahead of me. So get a Raspberry Pi. You got one. Then put MAME on it, and that means you can play retro games. You'll need to connect the Raspberry Pi to a screen. I guess you do that already.
Emulator for like retro games on my computer.
Oh, all right. Okay. It's probably similar to MAME. MAME's the open source free one that a lot of people use. And there's some question about the legitimacy of the games you get. You know, you get the ROMs. You know this. You download the ROMs.
Yeah.
And in some cases, these are abandoned games and nobody really cares about anymore. But in every case, they're owned by somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, companies like Nintendo and Bandai and others who own these games,
Sega,
are a little perturbed, the people. But it's not like they're still selling these retro games. So I don't know. I don't have too much problems with downloading ROMs.
Mm-hmm.
Retro Pi is the distribution for the Raspberry Pi that will let you play old games on the Pi. See, the Raspberry Pi, even though it's $35, is faster than most of those old arcade games were. So you can play any of the old Atari, Sega, the Genesis games, the NES games. You can play all of those on a Raspberry Pi because it's plenty fast enough to do that.
Well, I mean, duh, it was made in like 1960.
Yeah, duh. Right. Before you were born. Practically, it's amazing they even had chips, computers.
Yeah.
So I think it's admirable you're saving up. How far have you gotten?
I have like $3.
You're a hundredth of the way there. So keep saving up. That's never a bad thing. And watch and see if a game comes out that you really want to play. And a game that maybe you can't get on your Wii U, right? Because if you get on the Wii U, then you don't really care.
Also, I went to Fry's and they said it was sold out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got one because one of our producers waited in line at GameStop for 10 hours.
Oh, my God.
And I said, oh, good, so we own a Switch now, huh? He said, well, I bought it with my money. I said, oh, you own a Switch now. Yeah. We'll be doing a review of that in a couple of hours. By the way, I'm told you can use the Nintendo Pro Controller with the Switch, which would be better. That's another $30. That would be better than trying to use those.
I already have one of those.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about that. I think you should keep saving up.
Yeah.
And then wait and see. By the time you get $300, you'll know if it's worth getting. You'll have seen all the reviews, and you'll know if there's a game you want to play on there and all that.
Well, I'm a big Zelda fan, so I'm probably going to get Breath of the Wild.
Aha, uh-huh. See? So if you're a Zelda fan, this is the only way to get the new Zelda.
Well, I mean, it's also on the Wii U.
Oh, it is? Oh, I thought they were only going to do it on the Switch.
No, it's on the Switch and the Wii U.
Oh, well, then you're set. You got what you need. What do you need a Switch for?
Portability.
Yeah, you can't take the Wii U with you. It's good. Save, yes, keep saving. You're doing a good thing.
Okay.
Keep saving. Watch the reviews, Max. And remember, the people reviewing them are old people like me, so you might have a different experience. See, maybe a friend will get one and you could play with his and see if you like it. That might be worth doing. 8888 Ask Leo. That's awesome. And keep using that Raspberry Pi. That's going to get you a lot farther in the long run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got $3. Yeah, I think there are all sorts of issues with this, but I'm the wrong person to ask because I'm not. I would never buy it anyway. Let's go, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for pumping up the jams. Somebody in the chat room says that at least the early reviews for the Zelda game on the new Nintendo Switch are maybe one of the best games ever made. And that kind of, if that's the case, then buy, right? That's the kind of, that's the test we always forget. We get all excited about, oh, pretty colors or whatever. I don't know. Form factor. Oh, it's innovative. It's powerful. That's a bad one, right? Oh, it's so powerful. And we forget that really all that matters with a game system is, are there fun games to play? Are there good games on it? If there's a good game for it, a game you really want, and our caller was really interested in Zelda, and if the reviews are great for Zelda, then get it. James in Laguna Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, James.
How's it going, Leo?
It's going great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, what a great kid, man.
Wasn't he cute? I loved it. Yeah. Oh, I already have a Raspberry Pi. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pretty down to earth for being so spoiled, I guess you could say.
I wouldn't say spoiled. He has $3 in his, to his name.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, we're really lucky. It's like having customer service and tech support from all like the major manufacturers and one number. So.
Well, I'm glad. I don't know how good I am, but we have certainly a good team of people in our chat room and listening to the show. It's pretty much any question we could answer given enough time. What's your problem?
Without the discernible accent.
Well, it's not so much the accent. It's the wait. Although I have to say, you've been waiting for a while, so maybe we. And we have parity in that respect. What can I do for you?
I'm good. Well, you know, a while back, I heard you talking about reviewing the Priv. Now, I was a BlackBerry user, kind of a late bloomer. I never got into BlackBerry because of the physical keyboard, but I really liked my C10, which was an all touch.
Yeah.
And you know, people thought I was nuts because you know I'm the only person in you know the United States probably using it, but. It was a great phone. Took great pictures.
What was it you liked about it particularly?
Just the OS. I mean, I'm a texter and a emailer, and it had the most intuitive, fastest.
See, the problem, of course, is that was a BlackBerry OS.
Right,
that's gone. So BlackBerry, for whatever reason, decided not to support that and moved to Android. Probably because they didn't have the resources to keep it growing.
And that all the app manufacturers were no longer developing apps.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, too, yeah. Right? If you don't have the apps, it's hard to succeed.
So that kind of brings me to my question. You know, I have tons of questions, but the most relevant and the most pressing right now is I need a new phone. And I've always been kind of like, not like the lemming. I never, that's why I didn't like I don't like the two-party, the two-political party system. I don't like just having two choices for operating systems either. So I liked...
Hey, unfortunately, in phones, it's really come down to iOS and Android. You know, there are still Windows phones around. In fact, the HP Elite phone is a Windows phone and is pretty impressive because it supports this thing Microsoft created called Continuum, which lets you use the phone as a desktop computer if you buy the right accessory. It's that powerful. But that's for a specific need. I think they're aiming it at the businesses where, you know, you're a traveler, you go to a lot of different offices, and you always have your phone with you, and you just dock it whenever you get somewhere, and now your computer is with you. There is a new BlackBerry that is getting raves. They announced it at Mobile World Congress, but it's an Android device.
Right. I know. I keep up with all that. I'm still, you know, the last BlackBerry made by BlackBerry was the Priv, and it... To me, that seems, you know...
I like the Priv. I think you remember, I was pretty positive of the Priv. It was a well-made Android phone, and it had a physical keyboard.
I missed your review of that, so I really wanted to know what you thought about that.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I don't use it. I gave it to my son, who promptly lost it, ironically, in Barcelona. but it does have a physical keyboard. It's not if now see because you weren't a physical keyboard BlackBerry guy, you're not going to really care about this. That's one reason people still cherish the BlackBerries. They like those keyboards. Their Z10 didn't have a physical keyboard. It was just a screen.
Right.
And the Priv was bringing the physical keyboard to Android, but it was a slide out and it was hard to use. It wasn't a classic BlackBerry keyboard.
Right.
The new Key One is not a slide out. It looks like it's just extended the phone to be a little longer. It's an Android device.
Right.
My suspicion is it's going to be very similar to the Priv keyboard, which is difficult to type on. I think okay. we might as well accept, and you accepted with the Z10, the on-screen keyboard. You get used to it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, okay. I've always been, like I said, kind of a guy that shies away from
an iconoclast, yes.
Thank you very much. What everybody else is using, absolutely. So there is a phone that is a very kind of a niche phone, and it's a European manufacturer. It's from Denmark, I believe. It uses Harman Kardon audio, so their audio system is Harman Kardon, supposed to, and stereo speakers. And I'm in the music biz, so I love a good audio system, even on my phone. So the specs don't look great.
What's the name of the phone?
It's a Lumagon.
Lumagon. Yeah, never heard of it. Okay.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, if you want to, it's like a watch or whatever that you wear and you want people to notice. It has that kind of looks to it and has that kind of appeal. I'm not sure if it gets stuff done. I have no idea. I was hoping maybe you...
Wow, it's pretty.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Wow, how much is it?
It's a luxury phone. Not like...
It's 24 karat gold.
Well, that's...
Oh, okay. They have some non-gold ones. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
They don't have on the website a whole lot about specs, do they?
No, I think they're counting on the
It's very pretty. Yeah. Do they say it's Android? It's not apparent. It's not obviously
it
Android. It is
6.1, I believe.
Oh
yeah.
Dear! So they've skinned Android, and the problem with that is you're already getting an older version of Android, last year's Android. But unlikely they'll update that right away because they have to adjust to make it match the skin. Right? It's a beautiful phone.
And through a carrier, you know, they're not really through any carriers here. So yeah.
Well, that's not as big a problem. I'm sure it's unlocked, which means. You could use it with any carrier in the U.S.
Which brings me to my next question. Sorry to take up the time, but how does – I mean, I know that some
– You just get a SIM card.
Some European phones, though, they don't use the same bands, the network bands.
Well, if it doesn't – now you got to check that because you got to – it probably won't matter for phone calling. It might matter for speed of data. So you should check to make sure it supports – the frequencies used in the U.S., particularly the data frequencies. This looks very nice. You kind of nailed it. This is a luxury phone aimed at an audience that really isn't a techie audience.
Yeah.
But wants
more like
something.
Like a James Bond audience.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely an evil villain phone.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it. I do like it.
Yeah, you're always at a risk when you do that because if this company doesn't do well, they could drop out of the market. Then you've got an orphaned phone, right. And there's always a risk.
I liked BlackBerry for the same reasons. You know, it's just
quite a few people orphaned in BlackBerry now. I wouldn't say not to get it. It's very pretty. I'm just curious. In U.S. dollars, let's. And I was almost, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. Let me check. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's dual SIM, which usually that means that it's going to have the bands for a variety. Oh, you know, it's not that expensive.
What? It's you still
about,
with me?
Yeah, it's about the same price as an iPhone.
Yeah, it's like, I think $720 plus the VAT. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can get it in black, white, or orange.
I like the orange.
Orange, wow. Well,
awesome.
You know what? Because it's not $1,500, you know, it's affordable, relatively.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, what could be wrong? The issue is going to be the radios, but usually, I mean, it's not. Yeah, no, it supports all the right radios. No, it's fine.
It has a night vision camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you sold me.
I love it.
You know, good audio is important, and I do think that you know, having good sound is actually, it's not that expensive. Obviously the 24 karat gold would be. They don't say what the processor is, which means it's probably, you know, not a.
I think it's a decent 1.7.
Okay. Yeah. It's 2.0 2 gigahertz 64-bit octa core.
Okay.
But they don't They're not saying which one, at least not on their website. I'm looking at the frequencies. The GSM frequencies are good. The 850, 900, 1800, and 1900, that's fine. LTE, fine. Who's your carrier?
T-Mobile.
Yeah. I think you could take this to T-Mobile, no problem. I would just, you know, go look at the T-Mobile site and see what their fastest LTE bands. Those new LTE bands may not be supported, but the basic bands are surely supported.
I really appreciate it.
You know, I'm tempted to get this. This looks pretty cool. It's a beautiful phone.
I just hate to spend the money and then be disappointed. I mean, there's no reviews. Nobody has it, you know, so.
Oh, so you want me to buy it, don't you? That's what you want. You want me to put my money down.
I'll probably send you one. No, I'm probably going to get that or the Prib.
Another one I would look at is the HTC U Ultra.
Okay.
For audio, this is HTC's always been really good on audio. It's a very pretty phone.
U Ultra. Okay.
Yeah, HTC U Ultra. That's going to be out pretty soon now, and that's at least HTC has some experience doing this. You know, I mean, they have four mics in it. It's got HTC's always done excellent sound. They have earbuds. They claim, and I did order this. I'm curious. They say we'll automatically tune the sound to your ears.
What?
Yeah, what? How? What?
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. I mean, I've been in audio.
Yeah, how would it know? I mean, Samsung's for a while has had a hearing test built into their operating system, which then, you do the tones, and then it makes a curve for your hearing, which is great. But this says, because your inner ear is as unique as your fingerprint, the HTC USonic audio platform analyzes your inner ear and automatically adapts the sound profile to optimize your listening experience.
Well, but if they're just basing it on the shape of your ear, yeah.
If that's all they're doing, that's ridiculous. Yeah, who cares? Yeah. Yeah. But this is going to be a fairly high-spec phone. Another one, just to look at. I think they're very pretty.
Okay.
Anyway, just another thought. And this at least is a company we know and trust.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Thanks, man.
All right. Have a good one. Leo Laporte. Oh, I don't need to say that. I'm on the break. And this will also have Android 7, which frankly is fairly important in my opinion. Yeah, I'm actually most excited about this HTC U Ultra phone. I ordered one, also another $800 phone. All the phones are way too expensive. But it's pretty. I think it will have very good audio. HTC always has good audio. The problem is HTC is struggling. They have decided, they say, to stop attempting to make it in the low-end phone and only do high-end flagship phones. And, of course, they also make one of the most popular virtual reality headsets, the HTC Vive, which is quite good, but I doubt it's a big market. So I'm a little worried about the future for HTC as well. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Scott in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
I've been listening to you for a few years. I have a small business. I'm my own IT guy. I'm pretty much self-taught from late DOS days and Windows for Work groups. And I got hit with ransomware about 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
And I've kind of been in computer hell since then.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I have about 6 to 10 computers. A couple of them are virtual machines. And so I think on like a Thursday, I think maybe I was browsing. I was looking for some parts or something. And I had a full screen message come up that told me I had a security problem and my files were going to be encrypted, da da da. I couldn't shut the window down, and I had to go down to the taskbar and right click it and close it. And so then I think Friday morning, my computer was logging me off. I was just going to work on it for like 10 minutes. It logged me off, logged me on every couple minutes. And so then I left it. And then Saturday afternoon, I hadn't even looked at it till Saturday afternoon. I was about to leave for a bike ride, and I look at it, and that note was up there again. And so I ended up, I remembered about it. I hadn't even remembered about it because, you know, you get those windows that scare you and whatever, and you just try and close them and whatever. And so it was a new computer. It was a new Intel Nook computer that I had built. And so it was only 3 weeks old, didn't have many icons on the desktop. There was an icon on the desktop.
Let me just stop you real quickly. Are your files encrypted?
All my files got encrypted, basically, and it spread through the shares to my server, to my accounting program.
So all 10 of your computers are now encrypted.
Well, okay, so by midnight that night, I start getting in contact with the bad guys. A couple, 3 hours later, basically they want 10 bitcoins, about $13,000.
Holy moly, they're greedy.
About midnight, I find a guy called Monster Cloud in Florida, and for $900, he's going to take a look and then tell me what he can do.
No, don't give him any money.
Well, okay, so I gave him his $900, and he took a look, and he came back within an hour and said, yeah, I can put a program on there, and then within 12 to 24 hours, it'll de-encrypt everything. $13,500 he wants.
What a jerk.
So
he wants more than the bad guys want.
Yeah.
So guess what he is?
I found an unencrypted file of a backup for my accounting, which is what I needed to spur me on. Since then, I've rebuilt everything. I also had a secondary problem with I use remote desktop connection, and I had somebody knocking on my door trying to open things up. I changed my IP address.
You should just stop right here. Do you have any of your data at all besides the accounting? How much of your data is intact? Do you have backups?
I ended up getting it all back.
Okay, good. Good. You're lucky. You had good backups, okay? So it's a shame you gave this guy $900. That's lost.
That's not. So I put a NAS server on. I'm backing up. I have about like 1.2 terabytes.
No, but right now you still have the virus on your network.
No, I rebuilt everything.
Oh, good. All right, good.
I've been going for 2 weeks.
So you wiped all 10 machines and rebuilt them all.
Yes, I ended up putting Malwarebytes. Okay, I've always not liked
Malwarebytes is not useful in cryptoware, so don't even bother. Get rid of it. That's a bad idea. I don't want anybody to put any security software in your system. That stuff just makes you more vulnerable. What you have to understand is you will get bit, and you heard what nightmares this guy went through. You will get bit if you are not practicing safe computing. The good news is you got a backup, and that's number one, right? Make sure you have a good backup that cannot be encrypted by the bad guy. That means it's either not on your network directly, or it's off-site, or you have versioning. Versioning will help you too, because as soon as you, what you, your mistake was not as soon as you saw this pop-up saying "whoa" and stop, disconnecting everything from the internet, disconnecting everything from everything else, one by one, going through your machines, making sure you have good backups, then wiping everything and starting over. Putting Malwarebytes on your machine will not protect you against ransomware. The problem with ransomware and all viruses these days, it mutates so fast that it's faster than the antiviruses get updated. So you will get bit, and an antivirus is not going to help you. An antivirus isn't going to help you in general. The only thing that will help you is protecting yourself, and for that you need to do a few basic things. Keep everything up to date. Your operating system, anything that goes online, every app that goes online. Update Office, too. We're starting to see ransomware come in Microsoft Word macros. So make sure Office is up to date. Don't run as an administrator. If you run as a standard user, in most cases, nothing can harm you because it doesn't have full access. If you keep your operating system up to date and you run as standard user, they can't get administrative access. Do not accept software from strangers. You get a pop-up that says, download this. Don't. Go to the website. You hand-enter the URL of the website, adobe.com or wherever it is that you need to go to get the update, and get it there. If somebody sends you an email with an attachment, do not open it. If somebody sends you a link on a social network or on a messaging app, do not click it. It happens way too often, but it almost always happens because of actually most often through spear phishing, an attack aimed at you. And the reason it's successful is because it comes from somebody you know, or your boss, or your bank, or the IRS, with an email attachment that is actually an application. It says it's not. It says it's an image or a PDF, but it's not. Safe computing is the only protection, and even then, you better have a good backup with versioning. Never give anybody any money. There were some ransomware programs that were, you know, malware that's so poorly written that it was removable. But that's a small subset of the total ransomware out there. This is so successful that many, many, many more bad guys are doing it. But in order for them to get this on your system, you have to help. You have to not update your system, not put those critical patches on, use old versions of the operating system or the browser or Flash, accept files from strangers. A lot of times they'll trick you with urgency, with scary messages. Your bank account has been hacked. Please log in immediately or download this software immediately. You need to be very cynical, very careful. But again, number one, keep up to date and do not run as an administrator. You only log on as administrator when you need to install something. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Backup is the only key to this. And gosh, don't pay some guy $900. And then he told, oh man, that's terrible. Oh, it was a chilling story, huh? I was watching The Shining last night. This is worse than that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And as happens every week, I don't know how, it's kind of magical. I look over my left shoulder in the middle of the show, and there he is, like the full moon over Miami, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and the Gizwiz, my personal hero since I was 12 years old. And he comes each week with bearing gifts. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing? I'm just downloading this file you sent me, make $1,000 every 3 minutes.
Yeah, that wasn't me, no. Can you believe, did you hear that poor guy's story?
Yes!
Oh, 10 computers. Oh.
It's a shame that these people make it so hard to do pretty much anything on your computer.
Well, that's one of the reasons I tell people stop getting Windows machines. Start getting Chromebooks where there's no ransomware issue, you know. From what most people do, you know.
That's the way to, yeah. I do have a Chromebook, too.
Yeah, yeah. What do you got for us?
Okay, something new I found at Toy Fair I thought was kind of interesting. There's a company called Schoenhut.
Schoenhut?
Schoenhut. And
is that what happens in a football huddle?
Oh,
is it a Schoenhut? Yeah.
Schoenhut. It's Schoenhut.
Nude flag football. Schoenhut. Yeah.
And they produce toy pianos. I think they might be the world's largest manufacturer of toy pianos.
Oh.
So to show you how things are going, at Toy Fair 2017, every new piano they introduced was a digital piano.
Wow.
But what's neat is they make them as baby grands, as spinets, as uprights. They're very, very cute looking. So, of course, they have USB so that you can use any tablet or smartphone with it. And for parents, they have a headphone jack.
To tell you how serious they are, their domain name is toypiano.com.
Yes, toypiano.com. Also, they are starting the world's first Toy Piano Day. That will be on March 18th. So you might want to go to that. That one's in London. So I think you can get to and from London pretty easy these days. So they make an entire range of them. I think it was 18 new pianos. So they're 25 key, a 30 key,
so
a 37
cute.
Key.
These are for pretty little kids, right? I mean, like
oh, yeah.
three or four-year-olds.
They're very clever. Yeah, yeah, actually, you get a better look if you go to toypianoshop.com.
Oh, that's where you can buy them, huh?
Because on that they list everything. Nice. But you're looking for the new ones. And Lee, I was talking to someone else at Toy Fair, and this I thought this was very clever. This person couldn't remember the name of the app But they said there's an app for kids learning the piano where you don't have to stay there while they practice. When they're done practicing, you get an email that tells you how well they did. Look, all done.
Here's the Game of Thrones theme on a toy piano. Are you ready?
Yes. Sounds a little loopy to me.
It's not quite as dramatic. Oh, this is great. So, and they have baby grands, which is appropriate.
They have baby grand, and they have these dual butterfly pianos where both sides of the piano open.
So cute.
I asked about a candelabra option. They said you have to provide your own.
Provide your own. They have animal pianos. Yeah, I love this.
Yeah. And they start at $100 and they range up to $500. And
you know, it's great. They sound like $100 too.
Well, don't forget the digital ones now.
They're real, right? They sound like real pianos. Yeah.
They sound like real pianos. So that's what you want. You want the digital version.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that rinky dink. Think, dink, ding, 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 ding.
So I mean, that's fun for about a minute.
If you want to, I think it's cute. I forgot all about toy pianos. I don't think we ever had one for our kids, but I think that's really sweet. If you want to find out more about the Schoenhut toy pianos, toy fair, where Dickie D saw a lot of cool stuff, go to his website. It's gizwiz.biz. You'll see all the things he talks about on all the different shows, but if you click the button that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy, there's links to the various pianos and things that he's talked about on this show. You'll also, when you get there, get a chance to play the What the Heck Is It contest. Brand new contest. Yeah,
did you know what it was?
No. What was the old one?
Oh, scroll down.
Demagnetize, magnetize. Oh, it's for screwdrivers.
Yes. And of course, for the contest, we painted those out. But you know what?
Did anybody get
more
it?
More than 100 people.
What?
Yes. Although someone sent me an email and said, Dick, too bad your What the Heck Is It is Amazon's deal of the day about a month ago.
That kind of gives it away, doesn't it?
It kind of gave it away.
Yeah, a demagnetizer, magnetizer for screwdrivers. Now, you're never going to know what this one is. It looks like a baseball that somebody took some bites out of. I don't know what that is.
Not a bad answer.
What could that be? So here's the deal. If you go to gizwiz.biz and play the What the Heck Is It contest, you can get in a drawing for autographed copies of Mad Magazine. There's 12 Mad Magazines for the right answer, 24 for the best clever wrong answer. What could that be? Come up with a good one.
Yeah.
And while you're there, take a look at his podcast, gizwiz.tv. It's all lots of fun until somebody pokes their eye out with the Gizwiz. Thank you. I don't know what that meant.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you, Dickie D. We'll see you
next
soon.
Week.
All right, take care. Let's go to Manhattan. Rod is very patient. Thank you for hanging on, Rod. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, great show.
Thank you, sir.
Great job. Really enjoy it very much.
Thank you.
I am going to be opening a retail store in the World Trade Center. It's really just a snack shop, but what I want to do is put in a display monitor where I can put on like certain snacks or beverages or things like new products, a featured product, something like that.
More and more, you're seeing these in stores and restaurants instead of the old-fashioned, you know, board where you put the plastic letters on it or a chalkboard.
Like that.
But yeah.
The simplest, most, I'm not looking to go cheap, but I'm looking to do something smart. All I want to do is maybe a slideshow where I could change it daily, weekly, something like that.
I mean, almost all the TVs out now have an SD card slot and the capability of putting a memory card in there with images on it and doing a slideshow. The difference between those and ones that are more expensive designed for display purposes is that TVs aren't designed to be on 24/7. And so there are heating issues, and there's wear issues. But if you're not going to run it 24/7, you're going to run it 8 hours at a time. I think, I would start with an inexpensive Vizio TV. Just make sure it has an SD card slot. You put the images on there. It does a slideshow automatically, and that's it.
What about the computer side of that?
Well, the reason this is a good solution is a few $100. You don't attach a computer to it. You use your computer to load up the SD card with images, and then you just pop it in the TV, and that's it. There's nothing hooked up to the TV.
Love it.
I think that's the simplest, but of course, as soon as you start looking for display monitors for restaurants and shops, you'll see more expensive, more elaborate solutions. And I've been told, because we talked about this with a caller a couple of weeks ago, that the reason those are more expensive is they're designed for lengthy duty cycles. But, you know, $300, if it wears out in 6 months, what's the name of your store going to be?
Rod's Snack Shack.
Is it going to be in the Whale?
It's going to be in the World Trade Center right next to the Calatrava Transportation Center.
I'll come by. That beautiful transportation center is amazing. I'll say hi next time I'm in town. Take care. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.